What's up, everybody? This week's podcast is good for your brain. Literally, I'll get to that in a minute. But up is down, down is up, and it continues to be the case. So I'm reading that Kellyanne Conway's daughter, who's like a big social media person, Claudia Conway. Well, it seems that Kellyanne posted a picture of her topless, and everybody's outraged. The daughter's outraged. And I'm like, why? That's the greatest house to live in. Your parents are posting nudes of you. It's the opposite of the way it normally works. Normally, the kid does it. Parents get mad. Kid gets grounded. I want to move into that house. It's the coolest house in the world to live in. Are you kidding? Hey, yeah, take as many nudes of me as you want and post them, Mom. Maybe we should smoke some weed together, too, when we're done, and hold up a liquor store. Anyway, my guest this week, Dr. Sanjay Gupta of CNN fame. He is on again, returning guest, talking about his new book, Keep Sharp, and how you can do things to get your brain to stay young and vibrant and healthy. Really cool interview, really like some eye-opening stuff that I didn't realize that seemed counterintuitive to me, but actually makes sense after he explained it. So how to keep your brain young and healthy. I'll tell you one way to not is to go to Claudia Conway's TikTok account and look at her postings. That'll take your brain away. All right, enjoy. Don't forget YouTube channel, youtube.com/PaulMercurio. Been posting new videos there weekly or even a couple of times a week. So please check it out. Please subscribe to that and tell your friends to subscribe to the podcast, please. All right. Thanks, guys. Enjoy your week. Hey, folks. Welcome back to the show. Very excited to have my next guest on. He's a return guest, CNN's Emmy Award-winning chief medical correspondent, New York Times bestselling author, host of the podcast Coronavirus Fact versus Fiction, Sanjay Gupta. Dr. Gupta, great to have you back on again.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Really enjoy our conversation. Appreciate it.
I wanted to thank you personally for what you're doing regarding COVID. I got COVID, and I'm guess now categorized as a long hauler and still dealing with a lot of issues. And I just can't thank you enough for putting the facts out there. I've been getting, obviously, like a lot of people, really frustrated, especially with Trump, particularly when he said it was a blessing to have gotten COVID. And it upset me so much, I ended up writing a commentary for CBS Sunday Morning on it, because this is not something you want to get. So I wanted to thank you for everything you're doing to keep the facts out there.
Well, Paul, thank you. And I watched that. I know millions of people watched that on CBS. And I'm sorry that you're going through this. You know, I mean, we tend to look at things in this binary way. You know, even in the news media, you know, people either lived or they died, right? That's how we look at it. It's very stark. And as you point out, that you don't want this virus. I mean, people do develop, you know, these long hauling symptoms. I will tell you, on a brighter note, you know, there's some new data that's coming out. You've probably seen it, because I know you're quite astute on these things, but some data out of Sinai and a little bit of data out of China starting to put a time frame on these long hauling symptoms. You know, we know that symptoms lasted a lot longer than people thought they would for typical respiratory viruses, but you know, now you're starting to see people who are recovering, you know, who had the symptoms very early on in this pandemic, people who thought that this was their life, frankly, brain fogginess, loss of smell, you know, really significant fatigue, all these types of things. So I wish you the best, you know, and I appreciate the fact that you did that, because I think a lot of people don't understand what the symptoms are like until they actually hear about it, you know, just quite candidly, like you did. Put out there.
Yeah. We really want to get to talk to you about your book, but maybe we get you back on to have a discussion about all of this. Actually, my doctor, Dr. Dana McCarthy, is at Mount Sinai, and I just had a session with her yesterday, and we talked about, you know, that this is literally a long haul, but But there's a lot that people should know from people who've had it. And it gets me, drives me crazy, especially when they say it's like the flu. But anyway, let's focus on your book, because but maybe we can circle back and get you back on to talk about all of this, because it's really important. But the book is Build a Better Brain at Any Age. Keep sharp, build a better brain at any age. And first of all, I don't know where you get the time to do all of this. It's exhausting just reading all the stuff you're doing. But you talk about, in sort of reading the book, there are the common myths about aging and cognitive decline, and some surprised me, and which I didn't know were myths. And maybe you could touch on those a little bit for folks.
I think the biggest sort of broad thing, and this is, you know, something that the neuroscience community believed for a long time, is that, you know, the brain is sort of this immutable, unchangeable, impenetrable organ. You know, it's encased in this black box of skull, you know, bone, and I think as a result, people thought that you really couldn't do anything with the brain. You know, you kind of got what you got, and that was it. I mean, that's even the neuroscience community thought you had a certain number of brain cells, and you drained the cash as you went through life, and that was normal part of aging. And we now know, it's been clear for some time, but we now know with great certitude that that's not the case. It's not just young children whose brains are still developing that are growing new brain cells, or people who have had an injury like a stroke or a traumatic brain injury who build new brain cells. People who have otherwise healthy brains can continue to build new brain cells throughout their life. And that may sound like a simple statement, but that was huge. So that myth is no longer, you know, something that the neuroscience community believes. And this idea that there are ways to do it. You know, it's not a random occurrence that new brain cells are just propagate from time to time. There is ways to strategically create new brain cells throughout your entire life, I think was those are some of the biggest things. You know, we use our brains. We use all of our brains, really. The idea that we only use 10 to 20% is not true. But I think what is true is that we probably only use 10 to 20% the most. It's like our brains are kind of like our COVID life right now. There's a whole world out there, and yet you've been in your home primarily. Maybe you drive to the studio, or you drive to the grocery store, or your kid's school, and that's about it. You can do all that stuff really well. But we're not really cultivating or harnessing the rest of our city or state or our world right now, you know, to extend the metaphor to our brains. We can do that, and we can do it well, and it makes a huge difference for our brains now and protects our brains later.
Yeah, and you talk about those things, and there are a list of things in your book, and maybe you like to hit on those a little bit, because a couple were fascinating because they were so basic. And one is, you know, the sort of the importance of social interaction and taking a walk down the beach with somebody, and sort of elaborate on that a little bit. I think that's important for folks to know.
Yeah. The way I approach this, I talked to all these various neuroscientists. I traveled to places around the world where they have very low rates of dementia, trying to understand their lifestyles. And then, you know, the book is very evidence-based, but you know, like, what does it mean then? If you have all this evidence, like, what does it translate to for your daily interactions? I was having this conversation with my mom the other day, and, you know, I said, this is going to sound euphemistic, but if I had to suggest that you did one thing that was going to be most beneficial for your brain today, it would be to take a brisk walk with a close friend and talk about your problems. A brisk walk with a close friend and talk about your problems. And I can break it down for you, but just simply, Paul, you know, the brisk walk more so than an intense run. We find that movement is key. And I use the word movement as opposed to exercise, because the human body wasn't designed to sit or lie for 23 hours and then go to the gym for an hour. The sort of continuous movement tends to be key, but intense movement, according to a lot of studies, may be counterproductive when it comes to the brain, because you're releasing a lot of stress hormones when you intensely exercise. When you're moderately moving, you tend to release what are called neurotrophic factors. Big word, but basically, as one neuroscientist described it, it's kind of like miracle growth for the brain. If your brain can build new brain cells throughout its entire life, how do you do that? Continuous movement is one of the best ways and most evidence-based ways to do it, but moderate. Why with a close friend? Well, the idea of connection being protection is very true, but even more so that loneliness is particularly toxic when it comes to the brain. It's almost the opposite. It takes away these neurotrophic factors. It's almost like the brain is saying, hey, I'm not sure I want to be around anymore. I'm not sure I need to function anymore. I'm not living in a society where I'm interacting with people. So why do I need to have all this neurotrophic brain growth going on? Why talk about your problems? Well, we find that connections are important, but it's the depth of the connection that really is going to be the most beneficial. And how do you develop really deep connections with people? There's all sorts of different ways to do it. But one of the things that kept coming up over and over again from loneliness researchers and neuroscientists was that if you allow yourself to be vulnerable, to ask for help even, or talk about your problems, those, as uncomfortable as it may be, those actually lead to some of the deepest connections that we have. So you get a profundity to the connection. On top of having the connection itself, you add into that the Miracle-Gro spraying that's going on from the brisk walk that you're doing, and it ends up being a really, really healthy thing to do for your brain. Really creates that neurogenesis, that growth of new brain cells.
Well, it's funny, this thing, idea of connection. Just before the pandemic hit, I had to stop it, obviously, because of the pandemic, but I was doing a one-man off-Broadway show, which was, it was basically, I just bring people on stage, just pick people randomly from the audience and just start talking to them about their lives. Nothing's pre-planned. It was born out of my stand-up, and the conversations were utterly fascinating. And what was happening, and one of the premises, a bit major premise of the piece was, I would say at the beginning of my opening monologue, that if we connect, if we talk, we connect. And if we connect, maybe think we're not as divisive as we seem. It's not a political show, and that these connections can be helpful. And every show, there were people going up to each other who didn't know each other before and heard their stories and said, I have a friend, or I'm here for you. Like, it was amazing. And you could see and feel it was, I didn't expect it to be that traumatic, but in a good way, but you could see and feel that these people like needed it. This is pre-COVID. This isn't a result of COVID. It was just, I think there's a lot, I've seen a lot of evidence in my shows that people need exactly what you're talking about.
I think, you know, we have known this for a long time, just as a species. You know, we are social creatures. You know, I think what has been remarkable really over the last decade is the idea that, you know, we still like to have evidence, right? Like, the idea that you can prove this now in some ways is important to scientists. Things take on an added degree of importance because you can measure them. And that's not always a good thing. I mean, you know, because you can measure cholesterol becomes the most important thing about heart disease. But what about stress? We know stress is bad for you, but how do you really measure that? It's the same thing with connection. We now know the value of connection. We can even measure how the brain changes in response to connection, how the brain changes in response to the depth of those connections. It's really extraordinary. And the other thing for someone like you, Paul, is that you're outside your comfort zone. I mean, you do this for a living, so, you know, maybe not as much outside your comfort zone, but still, having a unplanned conversation with somebody brand new is kind of a remarkable thing. And to do it in front of an audience is a remarkable thing. What is happening inside your brain when you do that? Besides the connection, you're harnessing and recruiting different areas of your brain that you're drawing upon all of a sudden to have that conversation. And that's building new roads in your brain. It's useful for you as a human. It's useful for you in your work that you do when you're on stage, because now you're less likely to draw a blank, so to speak. But I think, you know, more importantly, and this is the conversation I have with my mom, you know, if you're taking the road every day that you know and you do a really good job, that's the practice makes perfect part of your life. You got it down pat. That's great. But let's say that road needs some construction one day, or the road becomes blocked metaphorically, like, let's say, with an amyloid plaque. The road is great and served you so well, but now you can't travel on it. That's when you start to have decline, cognitive decline, memory loss, whatever it may be. If you built lots of other roads in the brain, then you may still have that amyloid plaque, but you're not going to feel the ramifications of it. It's kind of like in the heart, you know, you get a blockage in the coronary blood vessel, you could have a heart attack. if throughout your life you have what's called angiogenesis, where you've built lots of new blood vessels, it's not that the blockage isn't there, it's just that it's not affecting you. You can think of that the same way as you think about it in your brain with neural pathways instead of blood vessels.
Hmm. It's that utterly fascinating. I real quick before we jump here, there is a 12-week program that you lay out for people to strengthen your brain every day, which really I'm going to start to do. And I think that it would really benefit everyone. And obviously, this was an outgrowth of all of the research that you've done. The science, you talk about scientists from all over the world and some cultures where, you know, you call this super brain people. Is there a commonality that you're finding, and just wrapping up our conversation here, in all of these or most of these cultures outside of the U.S. that you've been able to sort of draw from?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, first of all, it's absolutely true that there are places around the world where dementia really isn't the thing. I mean, you don't expect that people are going to sort of develop decreased brain function as they get older. In fact, older people are sort of revered for the fact that they have the sharpest brains, the best judgment, all of that. You know, there's all sorts of different things that you think about with lifestyle, but I think the idea of just natural movement all day long was a common ingredient. Again, I don't want to overly simplify because there's a lot that goes into that, but I think it was, you know, I sort of was thinking about this a lot when I was writing the book. We often think of activity as the cure for things, right? You sit or lie for 23 hours a day, as I was saying, and then you go to the gym. You think of activity as the cure, but I think the mindset is really that inactivity is the disease. Inactivity is the enemy. And so every time you are about to sit, you stand instead. And, you know, if you can be moving, you move instead. That was a big deal. And it was because it was the body's way of telling the brain, hey, I'm here. I want to be here. I'm interacting. I want to be alive and contributing the most that I can contribute. So spray as much of these neurotrophic factors, continue to grow my brain as much as you can, because I'm in it for you know, a while. When we start to sit a lot or become inactive, it's almost the opposite. We stop growing new brain cells. The body's perimeter defenses start to shut down, all these things. So, you know, yes, nourish your body the right way. Yes, rest the right way. Continue to discover and find a life of purpose and develop those connections with people. But the movement is critically important. It's like the body's best way of signaling that I'm here for the duration.
Got it. Got it. Yeah, there's a neighbor. He was lived to be almost 100 near me. And little old man, was all hunched over, had his garden, had like a big, huge garden, would work in his garden day in and day out. And I'm convinced that that had a lot to do with how long he lived. But anyway, the book is Keep Sharp, Build a Better Brain at Any Age. Congratulations on the book. And again, thank you for all the really important work you've been doing with COVID. It's been very, very, very necessary. And please keep it up. And let's figure out a way to get you back to talk about COVID. I know you're busy, but I think that's a really important conversation, especially given I'm dealing with it, that it would be great for people to hear. But congratulations on the book, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
Okay, Paul. Look forward to talking to you again. Thank you. Good luck to you.
All right, there you go. Sanjay Gupta. Don't you feel smarter already? All right. Thanks again, guys. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't. And please tell your friends about the podcast and ask them to subscribe, because it would be good for me and my family on a lot of levels. All right. Thanks for checking out the podcast, everybody.